Good afternoon. It's 26 minutes left to the hour of five. Yeah. As always, this time of the day, it's home run time. Joining you as always again, it's Helmut and Dwight, and this is your home run show here on Eagle FM, your drive time show on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay.
So you were remixing with my voice, huh, Helmut?
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Auto-tune the heck out of you.
Well, at least it's not like the auto-typing or auto-correct function on smartphones.
No, auto-correct will get you murdered.
Yeah, I almost got there once. But yeah, welcoming you guys. Good afternoon to your drive time session, wherever you might be listening to us from across Namibia. But nonetheless, dear listeners, we bring you once again another particularly interesting talking point. It's about digital trade.
This time we're in Zambia.
Well, not just Zambia. We're still in the rest of the continent.
I'm looking at the venue of the event. Yesterday we were talking about Togo, right?
Yeah.
Where the DET conference was taking place. It's being concluded today.
Mm.
And for today our discussion is it was already held.
Yeah.
It took place between the 6th to the 10th of May. And it was held in Zambia.
Mm.
Yeah, and that one was, a digital transformation. As in, this is where things begin to sound somewhat very similar in a lot of ways, because the digital transformation is basically a fancy way of saying, transition, hence the use of the word transformation.
Mm.
We've talked about transformation into the technological transformation or transition, if we can call it that, in terms of energy generation. Transition is taking place, and we see the same thing in learning, even though that one was to some degree shoved down our throats thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. Like we had no choice.
Which obviously also exacerbated, or it highlighted, key challenge areas.
Yeah, it was a want until COVID-19 showed up, and it was like, that's when we realized just how much of it we needed.
Are we sure the word want, Helmut, is the right word? You should have said it was an urgent need. Because how then do you... Because here's the thing that we always need to think about, an education system.
Yeah.
An education system is similar to like an economy. It cannot stop educating people. The moment you stop, there is a generation or a year or a class or a group of people in a country that will be, you can call them lost. Now, I was told once of such a particular story, Helmut, because, my sister worked with a woman in South Africa, in her early 20s when she worked there. And this lady was like in her 50s or 40s back then. So I'm talking about here 2003, 2004-ish. This woman was very good. She, similar thing that I saw with my dad. They were very good with, they're even better than calculators. They can calculate just by using brain power.
Mm-hmm.
They can make calculations just like that. You give them an equation, they understand the basics of it. But the moment they had to do with literacy exercises, like reading words and those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
and extracting information from words. Now, I'm literally the opposite. I'm a donkey when it comes to, and that's if I forget bedmas, the basic rules of algebra.
Yeah.
And anything mathematical, you have to remember the rules of bedmas or bodmas. But if I didn't know about bedmas, bodmas, you would find Dwight doing just other things in the calculation.
Yeah.
But if you give me storytelling, words, descriptions, and you ask me do the same thing, write a story, describe scenarios, observe things, and put it in words, it's very easy for many of us to do that.
Yeah.
So this woman, she was in her 50s, 40s, I'm now talking about here between 2000 and 2000 to 2009, that my sister worked with this woman in South Africa, and this woman was good with, she could literally calculate things out of her head. Now, I've seen one other person do that, which was my dad. He didn't need a calculator. He actually was even better at getting to the next particular digital spot of another number than a calculator. The downside was, Helmut, she explained to my sister that they were part of a cadre of children. Obviously, this is now pre-independent South Africa. It was a particular educational experiment that the South African Education Ministry back then, pre-1994, which is South Africa's real independence, tried to do in terms of generating or testing which kind of syllabus would better work. Is it that you want more people that are technically inclined with strong mathematical and logical functions in terms of dealing with mathematical issues, or do you want this broad-based skilled individual who can then choose what they want? And she supposedly was one of that particular cadre, like it was like a 4-5 year experiment that they ran. And then the back then, and it was, she, the person told her that literally that the person that the administration at the time reversed back to, you know, having this aspect in terms of people need to know about the English and the Afrikaans and the geographies.
So the 5 years experiment, do you know, was abandoned?
It seems so, because this was obviously from a person that is telling...
That was, technically a guinea pig in that experiment.
Exactly. So when this particular example came out in this particular discussion, Helmut, you can see, okay, so there is a need for education.
Yeah.
But to test things in it, it's up to obviously the authorities to see what best works for the future that they wish to achieve. Mm. Now, in Namibia's particular discussion, when COVID came about, obviously for the whole of the world, but when you look at the Namibian case study, the case study was we needed to roll out e-learning platforms. Yeah. But then people realized that the parents don't have electricity at home. The parents, something.
It starts from electricity, man. That's
it starts from the foundational things. Yeah. Parents didn't have electricity. Or that the parents also didn't even have running water close to their homes. This is rural and urban, based upon a scenario that obviously they live in, low earning households, yeah, but that would not really describe the true setting, because if it's a setting, for example, like, in the rural areas where you've got to walk to go get water, how then do you deal with the COVID pandemic back then? And mind you, Helmut, there's a whole bunch of things that we still don't know of the damage that the COVID pandemic caused. You then obviously look at from that foundational set of things, printing paper, understanding things at home, because children learn best when they've got a supportive parent that can help them understand the workload that is being emailed to them. Now, if the child never saw any...
Dude, on that part, on that part, forget the child.
I'm sorry.
One thing the COVID-19 pandemic taught me is that, please, for the love of God, I know we are going for, pretty face, six pack, blah, blah, blah. Just make sure that he or she can do a little bit of math.
Mm.
Because, well, in lockdown, there's no amount of six pack or pretty face that will solve the numbers for the kids, because they'll be there like, okay, mommy, what's 1 + 1? And I think it's very embarrassing if you help your kid with the homework and then they get zero. Now, you know, they'll be there like, you can't ask them why they failed, because they'll be like, Dad, you were
the one supporting me.
Yeah, you were the one.
You were the knowledge base.
Yeah, you were the knowledge base. Yeah,
what did David Beckham say about helping his one kid with homework when they moved to the US? That was when he was bought by Los Angeles Galaxy. So he sat down with his one son and he was like, yo, what's this mathematics? And then I realized, yo, you footballers are almost the dumbest of the athletes.
You know what? Look, in that situation, I'm getting a tutor.
Because he even went like, yo, now remember, you're trying to help your private school educated kid do his or her homework, and you were a footballer who was told, don't worry about school. Just pass basic stuff, man. But
you're good.
You'll be paid £200,000 every week. And then you're almost going like, okay, yeah, I don't need to study.
I have money to take my kids to private
school. I don't care anymore. And then it comes to you to help the kid at homework, and you're like, yo, I missed that class, ne?
That's when I'll start telling my kids, I'm busy, go and ask your mom.
And the mom is like, Aish, you know, I was just a pop star, you know?
Not just like a slay queen there.
Hey, we shouldn't be making fun of multimillionaires, because they're already multimillionaires. We still have to get there.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, on the bright side, we can solve 2 + 2. But
at least we can solve at least I can solve an algebraic expression.
No, algebra is easy. Algebra is the easiest because you don't need a calculator. You're not dealing with giant numbers.
Yeah, you're not.
It's just a bunch of variables, yeah. You know, because it's letters. It's what, because of the presence of letters, I think that's what freaks a lot of people out. But yeah. Commercial break.
Namibia, it's time to dream big with JSB Sports. The Mega Giveaway 2025 is here with a massive 1 million Namibian dollars in total prizes to be won. Here's how to win. With every losing bet on our sports book of 20 Namibian dollars or more, you're automatically entered into the draw. That's right. Even when luck isn't on your side, you still have a chance to win big. Back your favorite teams, take your best shot, and let your losses turn into an opportunity for glory. Don't miss out. Visit jsbsports.bet. Place your bets and be part of the action. JSB Sports. Bet with the best.
JSB supports responsible gambling and is not for persons under the age of 18.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. Continuing where we left off, the digital economy, but the implementation thereof on the African continent, and that is not the algebra part. Now, the event that was held, to promote Africa's, the FCTA digital forum that was held in Zambia. A few days ago, and that's it's actually a series of speeches because there were a lot of people that that had to weigh in on the subject of of digitizing the African economy to sort of like this is part of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area because we want, this is cross-border trade on the continental level that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And we are basically talking about, catching up with technology, employing technology and to some degree or even, that's inevitable anyway. The use of AI in our trades for a lot of reasons. Now, one gentleman that's Rwanda's trade and industry minister pointed out several things that it's just as obvious as daylight that must be carried out in order to bring about the digitization of the of the trading. Or more like of the African economy. That's starting from he mentioned the three main components. That's the first of all, we have to figure out the digital divide. We're talking about the infrastructure. The infrastructure that enables the internet connectivity, which will then lead to two things: one, bridging the digital divide; two, making cross border trades, or mostly like including cross border payments possible. Remember when we're talking about Chinese company that's producing smartphones for the African continent, for the African market?
Was it our buddy Mara phone?
Not the dead one. There's the
Transion.
Transion.
Yeah.
In that video, one gentleman points out that the reason why he embraced that technology. One, it's affordable. Mm. Two, it carries out all the activities that, your old fancy electronic devices also carries out, especially on a basic level, carrying out electronic payments. His example was that, he has a smartphone and on a budget, which he was able to acquire on a budget, and all the people that work for him, this on a farm. Also, those all the people that work for him have electronic have smartphones. So instead of he finds it very easy to pay them.
But here's the thing that guy explained, Helmut.
Yeah.
Because I remember most of the video that I showed that I shared with you. That's actually a year old. But here's one point that they made in that video: mobile phone or smartphone technology is easily adopted faster by everyone than is a tablet, a laptop, and a standing full-scale computer, a desktop computer. Whereas in the more advanced economies, from Asia to North America to Europe, even to Central Asia and Central Europe and the Middle East, the computers and these tablets, because you need more processing power, supposedly, the explanation is, for more advanced tasks. But here's the thing, Helmut. In the Namibia, not just Namibia, but in the African context, we've got the discussion of, we still have these agrarian societies. Communities that live close to agricultural processes, which they call which is technically their lifeblood in terms of survival. Or, like in Namibia, we also have these communal areas and communal communities, which are aka traditional authorities. And those guys stay there most of the time.
Yep.
They don't live in a town in some cases. They don't live in a town. They stay there. So if you have bare minimum electricity in your community, but at least that you know that MTC had put up a tower in close proximity for you to make phone calls and receive phone calls, you at least do know that that tower has been upgraded as well to at least send you MMS video and sound files as well. So that means that you can also access the internet, which makes it easier, okay, rather just invest in a smartphone.
The financial institutions are way ahead, they're at the forefront of technological advancement in terms of how they embrace it and incorporate it into how they offer their services.
Mm.
And you see this because a lot of banks, especially the one that I bank with, I remember going to one of their branches and I asked for a bank confirmation letter.
Mm.
Now, the lady at the counter told me, well, you didn't have to come here for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you had to do was call the customer service center and then just ask for it. It will ask you a series of security questions and then email it to you.
And usually the security questions will be questions that you obviously had given them.
They would be usually, okay.
I'm saying that clearly so that if there's someone that's a scammer listening to us should know.
They are not going to ask who is your uncle's name or download it, with all due respect to your uncle.
Uncle's name.
Some of the standard questions they usually ask is, the activities around your bank account.
Mm.
When was the last time perhaps you withdrew, money and how much was it?
Mm.
And if you did any shopping, what did you buy or how much you spend? Just questions around that.
Yeah.
And, these are questions that would be very difficult for a random stranger who is not aware of what's going on. Who's not aware of your banking activities, it would be very difficult for them to predict.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are looking at a lot of things and also look at ATMs these days. Only large amounts will take you in the bank for you to deposit. Small amounts, the modern day ATMs, most if not all of them, actually some are just withdrawals only.
Mm.
But there are those that allows you to deposit. That way, you don't have to get in that long queue that you'd usually have to endure back then before that feature was included in ATM, in ATMs.
Mm.
Now, you see that, technology is advancing whether we like it or not.
But remember, Helmut, that depositing queue
also
sped up right now.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, it's safer to still, and we're obviously talking about, the behavior of consumption and the behavior of consumers now in relation to the movement of money. This has nothing to do with the banks, dear listeners. Just know that it has everything to do with the banks, but you can obviously observe from a consumer perspective, how it has allowed you to have more time to yourself. Mm-hmm. Because the banks realized that many customers don't want to come into the bank if they see that there's this
long queue.
Yeah. They don't want to come in. They'll even ask you, can't we speed up this process?
Yeah.
Why are we wasting time? Hence the reason why they always tell the bulk tellers, you better make sure you talk to the people that bring large amounts of money to deposit, that they come on certain days to make the process predictable so that it frees up the other tellers in terms of assisting the other. Because technically, Helmut, consumers like you and I, we are small, small usage consumers. A bulk teller is someone that, like a business, that comes and banks their money.
Mm-hmm.
So that teller needs to be with that person for an hour to make sure that everything is counted properly, every dime is accounted for, and everything is correct. Because that customer coming with that money counted as well before they brought the money. Yeah. They counted what they have
a record.
Yeah, they have a record.
Yeah.
And they're going to stand there with the teller, and that teller has to ensure that they're either above or below. But if they are either one of that deviation, they've got to provide soundproof to the person to show that probably maybe you didn't count it properly, but you actually had more or you actually had less. And this is what the counting machine says. And remember, that teller has a camera behind him. Yeah, don't worry for anyone from the banks listening. We all know people from the banks. And I'm always someone that does experiments in terms of talking to people. You know, what does it feel like being a teller? Helmut, do you know that people got a warning for missing a 5 cent? Yeah. Bank tellers, they get a warning for a discrepancy of a 5 cent. 1 5 cent.
You know, those are the things that we usually, you know, when you're paying for something at the counter and your change is 5 cent, you usually just, you know, just grab your stuff and then.
And you tell the cashier, no,
it's okay.
No, bruh. Because remember, a teller gets float. If people don't know what float is what you start with. Your working day. That's what cashiers also get. You get float and you have to maintain that float balance every day. So even if you make money above that float, you continuously to make money, you hold back the quantity that is supposed to be your float, your starting float every day. You hold that back and then you cash, you submit the rest for banking. The reason why that is done, obviously, it shows you processes. So what I'm explaining to you now is literally how retail businesses operate. Now, when you give what is supposed to be banked, let's say you work in a corner shop. If you give what you made as a cashier, if you give that rest above the float, give the rest to be banked to the boss. It is not for the boss to now go and buy a double cap bucky and go do other things and splurge on children and wife and so forth.
Yeah.
That boss is supposed to go and bank that money because there are suppliers that they need to pay.
Yeah.
There are salaries that they need to hold money out for at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
There are other commitments like water and electricity, utilities that they've got to pay for. And many people think in the aspect, because this digital trade discussion is talking about literally bolstering and boosting MSME, which the example that you referenced from that video that I shared, the Transition video, where the farm owner said it's quick for him to pay his farm workers because he can do everything from the phone.
Yeah, everything is done electronically.
You know? Now here's the thing, Helmut, you can only do that on a phone, on a smartphone, if you have a tower with strong enough signal in your vicinity.
You have internet connectivity to carry out the transactions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried sending an email between Arandas and Usigas?
Oh, no.
While driving. Not standing. You are driving. The car is moving. Have you ever tried doing that?
I've not tried that. I've tried, sending a picture on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
From the village.
Yeah.
Oof. It's painful.
So. And that's just...
I was dumb enough to try video call. I don't know what I was thinking.
And that is just through cellular mobile technology, through cellular, you know, cellular towers.
Yeah.
That obviously meant that you could probably do the basic function of doing a phone call.
Yeah, phone call, SMS. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. But anything that requires internet connection.
Anything that is a high data component.
Yeah.
Yeah, but before that, we've got the ad.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 gigabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepared.
And welcome back. The time is 5 o'clock on the dot. And before we continue with today's discussion, which is the AFCTA Digital Forum 2025 that took place in Zambia, we are going to share with you an audio coming from that very event. And the audio is the audio you are going to be listening to is one of the voice of the SG, aka Secretary General of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Secretariat. That is Wamkele Mene. Obviously, giving his speech at this event, please do take a listen. And we'll continue, obviously, building up on the material we have and that audio on the other side of the audio. Please take a listen.
Particularly leveraging on the digital economy. This forum we convene in this forum at a time when the global economy and global trade in particular is facing headwinds. The African continent must seize this crisis as an opportunity. We should not be consumers, creators, but rather we must be creators and innovators of the digital economy. The remarkable achievement that took place over the last few months in terms of adoption of the Protocol on Digital Trade is an important step forward. Your Excellency President, I was reminded of the statement that you made at the AU summit a few years ago, your first summit, when you noted the challenges that confront the private sector, particularly transit of goods across our borders. You also, Excellency, observed that the digital technology and deploying digital technologies presents an opportunity for us to address some of the challenges that our private sector confronts. It is therefore for this reason that this event is particularly important. It comes at the back of the adoption of the Protocol on Digital Trade, which has a number of very important provisions that enable and unlock the digital economy of our continent with a specific focus on private sector and youth entrepreneurs. Africa is a leading innovator in technology. For example, in the area of mobile banking, enabled mobile banking by technology, we as a continent boast a thriving startup ecosystem that supports innovation in technology and also supports the fast-growing fintech industry. Through digital platforms, the African continent has exposed the world to the creativity, of Africans, the ingenuity of Africans, and the innovation of Africans in the area of the creative industry through various platforms for streaming content. African content creators are leveraging digital platforms to build global audiences, showcasing the diversity of our continent, generating incomes, and creating jobs for millions and millions of young people. The challenge, of course, is that where these incomes are generated, the bulk of the incomes remain and reside outside of our continent. The Protocol on Digital Trade in its implementation must reverse this trend and must ensure that African content based on digital technologies and the revenue that it generates, that it resides on our continent. The challenge, therefore, is that we must develop the capacity to nurture and to create an enabling environment for content creators, for innovators, for young entrepreneurs to take advantage of this market of 1.4 billion people. The good news is this. Africa's digital economy continues to grow significantly. Projections indicate a substantial contribution of over 180 billion United States dollars, amounting to 5.2% of Africa's GDP in 2025, and is estimated by the year 2050 to reach over 712 United States dollars, accounting for 8.5% of Africa's combined GDP. Projections according to the IMF about Africa's digital economy, its size, and the capacity that our economy has to deliver. In the area of digital payments, the African Union, the AfCFTA Secretariat in particular, working with Afreximbank, have developed and are in the process of rolling out the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System, a digital-enabled platform that ensures that Africa's economic sovereignty is upheld by enabling trading in local currency. The rollout of the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System as a payments platform for the continent will reduce cost of doing business in Africa, particularly for small medium enterprises. Under the leadership of our heads of states, the Assembly of Heads of States and Government of the African Union, in 18 months, we have been able to adopt a protocol that is far-reaching in terms of the regulatory reforms that it introduces, far-reaching in terms of the ambition for digital inclusion, financial inclusion, the first of its kind around the world to encapsulate an ambition with legally codified obligations that shall ensure predictability of the digital economy of Africa and the regulatory framework to support that digital economy. We see immense opportunities in our continent enabled by digital trade. The continent of Africa by the year 2035 shall require the establishment of over 700 new data centers for the generation, processing, management, and commercialization of Africa's data on our continent. This will create investment opportunities and expand the reach of Africa's economy and employ young people, of course, where we implement this protocol and its ambitious objectives. To fully seize the potential of digital trade and make all of this that we shall talk about over the next few days, a reality, we will have to transition beyond the negotiating room, beyond expressing visions, to implementing this vision. We must act boldly. We must, above all, move together as a continent to create a single digital market. A digital market, as I've expressed, is projected by the IFC, the International Finance Corporation, by the year 2050 to reach $712 billion United States dollars. In this regard, in implementing this vision, we require strong support and leadership from the private sector. Without the private sector, we will not be able to advance in the creation of opportunities that we seek to create through this protocol. Small medium enterprises, particularly those that are led by women and young people, youth entrepreneurs, must be at the center of benefits of Africa's digital economy. I believe that the AfCFTA protocol on digital trade positions us for the benefit of all of the Africa, of Africa's digital economy. May I close with a reminder of the words of President Kgohlahla Mandela. And he said, and I quote, "It all seems impossible until it is done. It all seems impossible until it is done." So today we take the first steps of what appears to be an impossible task, creating opportunities in Africa's digital economy, ensuring Africa's digital inclusion, creating a single digital marketplace so that all countries, all economies in Africa, big and small, that they benefit from this large economy. Our continent must not be any longer a continent of potential. We must transition from being a continent of potential to being a continent of reality, of opportunities for our private sector, for our young people.
Welcome back, 11 minutes past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we are talking about the AfCFTA digital forum that took place in Zambia last week.
Yeah.
I think, last week. And the voice you just heard is one of the SG of the Secretary General of the AfCFTA Secretariat, Wamkele Mene. Weighing in on the significance of digitizing of catching up with the digital changes that are taking place in the technological sphere, if we want to keep the FTA trading block that we have, basically that's our continental trading block. We want to compete with the EU ones and the ones that you find in Asia, North, South America. So embracing technology in the way that we conduct, we are going to conduct our business is one of those things that we have to, one of those things that we have to do. While on the discussion of, on the topic of the Africa Continental Free Trade, like what will be required to pull that off, we have talked about a lot of things, I think, including transport infrastructure.
Yeah.
But in the way in which the money will be exchanged, because road infrastructure, transport infrastructure, that's how the goods are going to be exchanged cross border, how the goods are going to cross from one border to another, from from a buyer from a seller in Namibia to a buyer in Uganda. But how is this money going to be exchanged? You can't put it in a briefcase and then put that poor guy in a car and tell him to drive all the way to Uganda. First of all, that's going to be very dangerous and very medieval.
First question is, Amut, who still does that?
No one who is not money laundering.
Okay. Second question. For anyone that knows, our banks here in Namibia have got EFT functions. Where you can do cross-border payments. It's just, when it becomes a cross-border payment, you need to talk to your bank first. Because your bank, there's a new thing that they brought in last year in 2024. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously where the AfCFTA, and this is now technically where we need to get in before that ad break catch-ups on me, where we need to get into the first conundrum of, the first phase of conundrums that exist. Now, why I say the first phase, Helmut, there's something that okay, I read into it, but I didn't pay attention to it. But it, but on my particular bank, because I also do online payments,
mm-hmm.
I saw this particular thing. Because when you go to the website, and then obviously you have a different section that you've got to log into for your online banking, mm-hmm. but it kept flashing this, and I tried reading the thing. And it speaks of that you just have to remember that there's going to be some sort of a tariff penalty on doing a payment outside of Namibia. You're sending money out of Namibia.
Yeah.
Ad break.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Welcome back. Speaking of digital forum, AutoCash, easy money. But before we continue with today's, before we continue with this discussion, let's take a live read.
Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications for postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below-mentioned online postgraduate programs for June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Occupational Health and Safety. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field. This is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Higher Education Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a 1 year blended course. Master of Higher Education. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. Now, what kept flashing?
So, with the flashing notice on the website, mm-hmm. before I logged in to do my online payments,
yeah.
My particular bank told me that if you do any cross-border payments from some day in September 2024 last year, because it started from September 2024, just remember there's this new particular legal requirement that they have to comply with, obviously from the Bank of Namibia,
mm-hmm.
regarding cross-border payments. So that means any particular payment that you're trying to do outside of Namibia, there will be certain particular discrepancies or scenarios that you'll have to
extra
participate.
Charges of some sort?
It could potentially highlight that depending on the activity. If you're a business doing a cross-border payment, because remember, in most cases, businesses also do EFT payments, meaning electronic fund transfers. But it obviously depends. Helmut, I paid for my Google, for the extra Google storage on, for my Google Drive and other particular things.
Mm-hmm.
All I did was feed it into the portal there on Google, and it allowed, it subtracted the quantity directly. The discussion just from that has been one of how does it translate to anyone else and their particular needs and their particular wants? Because here's the discussion that takes place. Yes, Mene is correct that most of the particular digital services and products provided digitally and online, the money is somewhere else outside of the African continent. But if we start once again with the foundational analysis, policy analysis, and infrastructure analysis on the ground, we saw with COVID what happened with e-learning.
Oof.
Now, how are you supposed to give someone a laptop, if they don't have electricity at home to charge the thing?
Yeah.
And how are they supposed to know about being, what's that thing's name? Ergonomically skilled. So ergonomics, if people don't know what ergonomics is, please go look it up, dear listeners. But I learned about ergonomics because the human forms part of an information system. A computer is not just your only information system. You, the human, form part of it. And that's also how people must understand AI, is that you as a human, you are inputting data. Mm-hmm. You're putting data into the machine. And you are expecting certain outputs from the machine, because the machine, this particular computer in front of us, the smartphone in front of me and you, is helping with outputs. So if you are Google searching something, you are inputting a command to achieve an output that needs to be reflected, something satisfactory to you. What then happens from this particular discussion, Helmut, is that even the philosophy about how the human fits into computerized systems, digital systems, and all those particular things, they are even being championed by the wrong guys. Why I say they're the wrong guys? That guy that spoke, Wamkele Mene, he's an economist. He studied in the UK. He's from South Africa. He's the Secretary General of the AFCTA. But his wording in that short 9-minute clip that we heard, his wording is based upon, look at this, like, it's like a, it's like the pep talk man you get as a football player or as an athlete from your coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you must do this, you must do, but you're not telling the athlete how to achieve the end result that you are trying to motivate them on to achieve. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're not showing the strategy. You're not showing the tactic.
No, just, when you're in that when you're on that pitch, I want you to score.
Yeah.
Yeah, full stop.
How? We don't care. Just score. Okay, if it's an own goal, no own goals, please. But we just want you to score. Yeah. But then people don't understand how you've got a 13-year-old German kid who is in the development program at Borussia Dortmund, who passes better than the best African footballers from 19 years and upwards, who passes better, who knows about spatial management, who knows about man marking, who knows when to pass, how to pass, and even how to stop the ball better than anyone else in an African context.
Yeah.
Because in other places across the world, they realized, train the people step by step to ensure fluency, fluidity. The whole process should flow unabated. Helmut, if you become sick, then you know the process can continue from there.
Now, this is, okay, you just reminded me of something that I have observed a lot.
Yeah.
Now, I'm one of those people that, have a collection of Rubik's Cubes because I like puzzles. That's one.
Mm.
Now, every time I leave the house with one, I've come to learn that a lot of people are interested in them. So they would just tell, just grab one from my hands, like, well, how do you do this?
Yeah.
I would just, one guy at a, service station here. Now, I bought one at the service station on my way out. It was like, do you know how to solve that? It was like, because, this is something that I've been doing since high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, at this point, it's just muscle memory. Now, every single one that have taken that thing from my hand, they want to cross their fingers and hope it works out. And I keep hitting myself in the head and telling them, guys, everything, you need a formula.
Mm.
You can't cross your fingers and hope it works out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now one of the biggest mistakes they make from the get-go is, you know what? I'll solve the yellow side and then I'll get to the green side. I'm like, actually, that's your biggest mistake. You solve it layer by layer. You start with the bottom layer, the second layer, and then the third layer. Not by side. That's when,
Hey, man, don't knock us. Some of us don't play with Rubik's Cubes every day. Yeah, I also thought that way. But then you realize there's like one layer that's literally muddled up. And you sitting there, Dwight, with now, okay, I solved one side. And then you look at the other, how many sides are there? Six sides.
Yeah, there's six sides.
You look at the other five sides, then you realize, oh my goodness, I still have to get here.
And it
would spoil the progress that you made on this side. It would spoil the progress here.
You see, that spoiled part. Yeah. That spoiled part is the most interesting part about Rubik's Cubes because, you'll realize that, okay, how to put this?
Yeah.
The last algorithm that you'll have to, that you'll have to do to complete the whole thing is the longest.
Yeah.
And it involves dismantling that whole thing.
Yeah.
And then re-dismantling it again. Now,
or reassembling. Dismantling and then reassembling.
We call it, it's basically called scrambling because the reason why the algorithm is long is because you are scrambling it to get the pieces in the right place, the last ones in the right place.
Mm.
And then, doing the reverse of that scrambling so that you have the whole thing incomplete.
Mm.
The first thing is, if you are scared to, if you are scared to, to scramble the part that you have already solved, you're never going to solve it.
Mm.
Because,
do you know what's the worst thing I also found out about chess? Because chess is also the other particular game that helps you with memory.
Like strategy.
With strategy. Yeah. Besides reading.
Yeah.
Because what you're speaking about is obviously just helping the brain work.
Yeah.
This was literally with chess. Do you know that there are strategies in chess?
My cousin plays chess. She have tried teaching me, and these days, I'm just annoying her.
And you know that most strategies are mentioned after all the chess grandmasters.
I didn't know that.
There's a lot of them that are Russian.
Wait, what?
Yeah. It's literally moves that you hope that it's based upon a scenario that you hope the opposing player makes this move for you to quickly get to a chessmate. Look, you can play the game for the sake of playing the game.
Uh-huh.
But then obviously as you play the game, you start becoming annoyed because you have to say, let's get to a quicker resolution of things.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just moving bits and pieces around for the hope that you do something. In essence, it's about getting to the king and forcing a checkmate, mm-hmm. or you force a check. Or you achieve a check. Many people don't realize that the game is to the aim is to achieve a checkmate, not just a check. If you guys don't know what checkmate and check are, check is literally where you're in a position you literally can kill the king with one move. Checkmate is literally you boxed in the king that any move he makes will lead to a kill. So you actually force a surrender. That's my layman's definition or interpretation of chess. But that's what I realized. And that's one of the reasons why I don't play chess, because I like to keep my pride intact. I don't want to be human. You don't know the level of saltiness. I now have to use a gaming term.
Yeah.
The level of trolling and saltiness that chess players are. They will rub it in your face. If they beat you in 10 seconds, they will rub it in your face. I learned my lesson once. I'll probably teach kids, and then allow them to win. But a fellow adult, no, bruh. No. There's a girl that does that on YouTube. She plays chess and then records the chess stuff. And she once bumped in. Now she herself is supposedly a grandmaster.
Yeah.
And she bumped into a kid that's also
of the same level of skills.
A youthful grandmaster himself. You get monsters in this world, bro. People don't know it, but you get monsters in this world.
Look, one thing is, speaking of monsters, one thing is, that's why I don't subscribe to the whole idea that, take for example, Gen Z's or young people are soft. Because anyone that says that have never played video games.
No.
Because in that world, you can't be soft. I mean, the cursing is part of the game. Like, it's brutal to the core. But, well, it's an entire community.
Yeah.
Yeah. So clearly, emotionally, for you to play video games, you have got to be strong or you're going to quit.
But Jen, here's the thing also, Helmut, now that you're on video games, the video game industry is one of the fastest growing industries in this world.
Globally, yeah.
Globally.
It's surpassing the...
Africa is literally ignored.
It's surpassing movies.
No, it has.
Entertainment industry.
It continues to surpass the other side of the entertainment sector entirely. I mean, even the other day, there's a French company from former Ubisoft. Okay, Ubisoft is also a French company. Former Ubisoft developers. Their company's name is Sandfall Interactive. They recently brought out another game. Now we're still on the digital trade of things, dear listeners, because there is a little bit of a misnomer taking place here and a little bit of a misinterpretation of digital trade. The biggest digital trade aspect, Helmut, is happening in the world of the over-the-top services that you and I have spoken about last year as well. over the top services are things like your Netflixes. Like I just explained, I paid for my for extra storage on my Google account. I bought an extension as well.
Extra storage.
Yeah, which is technically you are just, you know, expanding it from the free version of 15 gigs. You're just expanding it to the 100 gig option, which is $2. Can you believe it? Per month. Yeah. $2, 40 Namibian dollars per month. And the thing is, where does the service sit that Mene mentioned now?
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, but before that, we've got an ad break and we come back right after that.
So Ventu Beer asked Namibia to be real. And we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400 who are Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold. It doesn't get more real than that. As Ventu, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Owuli omunangeshefa nowahala okushigitha omayakulo yoye okupitila mohulike radio station yoye yo Eagle FM enyamukulo olongaha ningi kwatafano na Monica koshikondo shoipindi konola hetatu imwe heyali imwe ne heyali imwe imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116 mombelewa konola hetatu natu Bali o hetatu vatatu ne nola no natu nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodri.
Welcome back, and we are still on the discussion of the FCFTA Digital Forum 2025 discussion into the implementation of basically more like looking at the technological part of the implementation of the FCFTA, more like implementation and the operation thereof. Now we were on the, you know, we were on the entertainment, which is the digital, one aspect of the digital, you know, digital aspect of what's, you know, of the changes that is taking place globally. And, during this forum, I'm not sure if it was, Mene who said, who is, the Secretary General of the African, Continental Free Trade Agreement. Or was Rwanda's Trade and Industry Minister Prudence Sebahizi, one of these gentlemen, talked about content creation.
Yeah.
And the monetization of on the African continent. We're looking at the youthful population, the, you know, the size of the youthful population, and the fact that a lot of Africans are already monetizing, you know, a lot of these foreign digital platforms. And, how far is the dispute between Meta, you know, between Meta and the Nigerian government that led to us witnessing Meta threatening to pull out of Nigeria.
Mm.
Now, one lady who is Nigerian, and I think she's a digital analyst or digital expert, but she's coming. You know, she was being interviewed by a Nigerian media house, by a Nigerian based media house, but she was based in the UK at the time. Mm. One thing she pointed out, this is basically one of those questions where people wanted to know the pros and cons that will come with Meta pulling out, aka, you know, pulling out one of the, pulling out of Nigeria. And one thing that she mentioned was that one thing we have to understand is that a lot of young people in this economy, in this country, have found a way of making money out of this platform. So if they pull out, obviously they will be at a disadvantage. And when you look at content creation, this is something that she points out that I also, I did not look at content creation from that angle. That some of the content creators are pretty big, and they're big. That means they have hardwares, they have cameras, they have sounds. That means you have electronic shops that are benefiting from the benefiting from their existence. Now, and also they, a lot of content creators have their editors. They have a sound guy. They have a camera guy. All these guys will lose their jobs just like that. So when we look at content creator, when we look at content creation, we more often just limit it to a 4 minute video, or more like just a 5-10 seconds video that you're seeing on social media. But the level of expertise from different individuals that had to go through to make that video of that quality in terms of lighting, that quality in terms of sound, and in terms of creativity, there are a lot of individuals involved. There's a lot of creativity going on. Going on that 10 seconds video. So content creation, on the other hand, also is one of those aspects of the economy that's put at a tail section end of the economy by a lot of African countries.
Mm. It also factors into, because they have a aspect of intellectual property in the protocol as well.
Yeah.
The downside here is, Helmut, the protocol itself, I actually want to read this one particular thing that was highlighted by another platform that continuously observes the impacts of the AFCTA. And this particular gentleman made a very keen observation specifically based upon this, based upon the protocol. Now, why he referenced the protocol specifically was based upon the aspect of intellectual property and intellectual property protection on the continent. Now, in most cases, how a lot of us are consuming intellectual property is literally through the over-the-top services that are present. And this is, once again, your Netflixes, your YouTubes, other people that love reading, digital e-books and stuff like that, from the Amazons and so on. These particular platforms have intellectual property embedded protection embedded in it. Now, this, let me just pull up this particular blog itself. They highlight here specifically that it was a 1993 or 1994 treaty on the AU regarding intellectual property protection. But the World Intellectual Property Organization's own treaty that came into effect in 1995, 1996, between those 2 years, is more implementable than the AU treaty. Because WIPO or WIPO is literally a UN agency.
Yeah.
So anything that you agree to on a UN level as a UN member state automatically cascades into your legislation locally as a country. You have to adopt that and formulate it so that it corresponds to the legislation globally and this particular legislation locally here in your country. And I just want to read this particular excerpt for you, Helmut, from this platform known as tralak.org. It was written in 2024 last year, February, this particular analyst, John Stewart. Now, he notes here, the draft protocol, as it stands, and it needs to be pointed out that although it is a mature draft, a final text adopted by the Assembly of the AU is not yet available. Now, the protocol that I saw on the AFCTA Secretariat's website, it doesn't say draft. Just to be sure for the listeners, the thing doesn't say draft. The thing literally says protocol, because it's even in multiple, just to show you, Helmut, so that you can also see. The thing literally says protocol. It doesn't say draft anyway. So I don't know where this guy saw the word draft. That's not what I've got here in front of me. However, he notes here, it is a progressive document, even though from what he saw was a draft phase of the document that aims to encourage digital inclusion of citizens, digital skills development, and promote digital economic integration by MSMEs. However, there are several important exceptions to this. He notes, firstly, the protocol refers to an annex on rules of origin for digital services, which seems to imply that some member states are expected to implement customs duties on these DDS, digital, you know, rules of origin originating from third countries. For example, Google with its services sitting in the United States. Amazon with much of its services sitting in the United States. Alibaba with its services sitting in China.
Yeah.
So you immediately have issues there. Many of the game companies. Just imagine Activision Blizzard. Do you think they will position intellectual property in your country if you don't even have a data center, a dedicated large enough data center to handle traffic? They'll first ask you, how many people in your country have internet? And if you can't even prove that basic statistic, then how would you expect them to invest? Then all they will do, they will literally do with that court case from Nigeria, the Meta thing, they will just blanketly say, okay, fine, we can sacrifice this one sector, or we can sacrifice this economy. We don't care. It's an economy of three people. We don't care.
Yeah.
Because we've got a bigger footprint in South Africa. That's the first thing they'll say. Ah, there's South Africa. 60 million. And that's how business people think. They go like, okay, what is my footprint in SADC? They go like, okay, Dwight, you are in Namibia. You are in South Africa. You're a little bit in Botswana. A little bit in Zimbabwe, but you're not in Angola. You're not in, you've got a very negligible footprint in Angola, a very negligible footprint in Zambia, and in Mozambique. And then, issue flares up like the Meta case. Next question you ask is, is it possible for us to take a hit from cutting off this particular market or this particular economy, from using our services if their legislators or their regulators try to, you know, just have a thick voice, just add more bass into their voice about rules and regulations and compliance. And if the strategic planners in your organization say, yeah, you can take the hit from this because that's an economy of 3 million people. 50% of that country, of that economy lives in rural areas. They don't have internet access. You can take that hit. And then you ask them, okay, so what's the biggest share, market share I've got in SADC? No, your biggest market share is in South Africa. 60 million people. The most industrialized country there. They've got better financial systems, better internet integration into global internet services. Then you go like, for sure, let's do business there. That's how strategic thinking works. You look at what are the pros and cons, what can you eliminate, and what is an issue, what is not an issue, and then you go like, okay, streamline everything. We invest in that market.
So it's so it all boils down to, if we cut ties with this market, can we handle the blow?
Yeah, can we handle the blow? Now,
if we can, we say goodbye. If we can't, that's when you start negotiating. Like, hey, Indonesia, can we just increase the amount of money that we?
Now, here's the thing, also about Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sneaky feeling, Helmut, it's not actually Meta that made those threats of withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Meta is not dumb. It's more than 200
million
people.
More than 200 million people, yeah. That's
in that economy.
Market, yeah.
Why would you antagonize such an economy? However, the discussion from Meta is based upon literally something that resonates within the AFCTA discussion. Trying to bring third-party participants with their intellectual property to invest in your economy. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the incentive for them to do that, Helmut?
Oof.
Literally,
that's a question.
What is the incentive to do that? What's in it for them to invest that money? Reason why I position that particular discussion, right?
Mm-hmm.
The current discussion, let's look at it from a scenario of, what is being done. For example, what kind of, internet usage do you find, and investments in internet infrastructure do you find there? Nigeria is not a joke. They do have, in some cases, very strong a very strong presence, primarily in terms of the adoption of internet services. Nigeria is similar to like what the developments happening in Kenya.
Yeah.
Nigeria is similar to like the developments that you would even find in, who's the other country in Africa? Not Morocco. I think it's Algeria. Algeria or Tunisia.
Morocco is somewhere on that list.
Morocco is, but there's most the dispute between Morocco and the AU because of Western Sahara.
Oh, dear Lord.
Because of Western Sahara. And Morocco claims ownership over Western Sahara, but Western Sahara went and appealed obviously to the bleeding heart syndrome that the rest of Africa suffers from, which is the nostalgia of the hardships of colonialism and, freedom fighting and all that and liberation struggles, because it was instantaneous for them to go like, it's not good what you're doing, Morocco. Without interrogating this question properly, why is Morocco laying claim over Western Sahara? Helmut, I've sat with a map at home. Nah.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't say where this map is hanging. But I sit with this map at home and I look at this map every day. Every day. And this map was made in 1990-something or 1980-something. 1987 or 1990. One of the two. Reason being, this map doesn't recognize South Africa on the map, even though on the map you see the words South Africa, but when you look at the identification of flags below the map itself, South Africa is not South Africa.
It's not recognized because of the apartheid government.
Exactly, because it says Namibia and Namibia, but the second Namibia has a South African flag. And they're in the same box, which indicates you can consider these two countries as together in this maps, when this map was made, which is way back then in that particular discussion. Then I see Western Sahara up there below Morocco. And I was like,
oh,
why is Western Sahara identified as a separate territory from Morocco? Now, the particular discussion from this is which is the same trap specifically, which the SADC military mission to DRC walked into. Why I call this a trap? It's a strategic mistake, or it's a mistake based upon strategy. Reason why I highlight that this is that in some cases this was strategic, sort of like a fumble or a knock on in rugby, is like you knock on the ball and it's a foul. Was that? We don't recognize that Morocco is actually a kingdom.
Yeah, it is. It's a constitutional monarchy.
It's a constitutional monarchy. And a monarchy, literally, if they say that was my territory, and they can prove through whatever they obviously present.
Monarchies is most likely through genealogy.
Yeah. And then they have their discussions based upon, you know, the motivations that they
who
provide.
Who conquered what, which time, you know, the land.
The things that happened there.
Yeah.
And without understanding the nuances between the North Africans, which are predominantly Arab, some of them are Berber, some of them are, what's the other North African large ethnicity? It's Berber, it's Arabic, and there's another one. There's a third one. If you don't understand the nuances between those guys,
mm-hmm.
and the other Muslim Africans, I'm not talking about the guys from Mali, the guys like from Senegal.
Sub-Sahara.
Yeah. The guys that are in the Sahara and below.
Yeah.
Like the Sudanese, the Malians, the Burkinabe, the Senegalese, even the Gambians, because Gambia is below Mauritania.
Mm-hmm.
Mauritania, which is a country that still practices modern day slavery till today. Yes, Helmut.
One more time.
Mauritania practices modern day slavery till today.
How is that possible?
Go and ask the AU. How do they allow a country like that?
Okay,
because the Mauritanians are doing this between themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself the question.
Is it a traditional thing, political thing, religious thing? Because
I was shocked myself. I had to look that up, fact check that thing so many times, because this was a YouTube video that blurted out this particular Mauritania is one of the is an African country that still practices slavery till today.
Well, things like slavery is very easy it's very easy to justify if you are one of those people that that try to find some dumb rationality around caste systems.
But caste systems are what's the thing's name? Helmut is in India. Because a caste system in India is literally based upon your position in society. No matter what you do, you can win the lotto and everything.
Yeah.
Your position in society, that's why in the Hinduist that society in India is a very complex society to understand because it's thousands of years old. And for you to come along here with...
Like it's really old.
Yeah. For you to come here with an African liberation, freedom fighting mentality
yeah.
to a country that has been existing for 1,000 years. Their societies.
With a lot of, foreign influence. You know, it took me, someone had to point out to me that the Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan, for example, the guy that commissioned the construction of the Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
Mughal is, it has some kind of Indianish native language influence, but it can be translated to mean Mongol because of the Mongol influence.
But they were Muslim. The Mughals.
Yeah.
If you read it, it says Murgal.
Mughal.
Yeah, but you have to pronounce like you're pronouncing it.
Yeah.
Mughal.
Now, when you say that I don't want to be punched in the face.
No, because it's a piece of history.
Yeah.
That the current Indian administration or the education administration under Narendra Modi.
Modi, yeah.
Is most trying to take out that piece of India's history, the Islamic history part. Because the Mughal Empire in India is regarded as one of the most successful, particular periods. In Indian history.
One of the golden periods.
Yeah, one of the golden periods. And at that time, they were a very liberal society because Muslims and Hindus obviously interacted with each other freely. Even though India is predominantly Hindu, the discussion had always been that, Islam was the sort of like this acceptable religion and societal dimension of overall Indian society because the Christians then came to that part of India, and then the Christians tried to bring in Christianity.
Is there a type of chaos going on this planet that doesn't involve religion?
No, because religion was one of the first formats, Helmut, of trying to provide or trying to install an aspect. Actually, religion is one of the oldest mechanisms known of social engineering. So when people go and look at what social engineering is, what the Africans don't talk about a lot, because even pre-independence in our discussion, in Namibia and in South Africa's discussion, there was social engineering taking place, Helmut.
Yeah, churches were heavily involved into pretty much everything that was going on.
No, it wasn't just churches.
All the way you can go back to the beginnings of, go back from the beginning of time.
No, but I'm talking just about the discussion of social engineering.
Mm-hmm.
The aspect of social engineering was now a responsibility that fell onto technocrats, bureaucrats, politicians in the modern day era. That's now from 1900 to now, where they had to now position resources close to the urban settlements or collections of where you had human settlements.
Mm.
This could be rural or urban. In this particular discussion of things, Helmut, you sometimes saw beautiful social experiments. And sometimes you saw chaotic things. Or you sometimes had yesteryear success stories. And the modern day politicians and planners can't emulate what happened back then. Case in point, the United States today and the United Kingdom today. But still, we quickly have a live read or an ad to take care of.
I swear.
This is a Velvicha University live read. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications for postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvicha University is inviting applications into the follow into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Project Management Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. Master of Project Management. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Monitoring and Evaluation Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. Master of Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Now, coming back from that quick break right there, dear listeners, Helmut, as you always say, we've got like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Usually we appropriate extra from the BES guys, but it's not like we are complaining, you know, because it helps us just round out our message.
When
you look at the discussion, Helmut, for example, like what this digital trade forum discussion also tries to achieve, it is to an extent also a social engineering component, because look at the rate of technology adoption taking place anywhere else versus locally. Now, here is where I will weave in a discussion that came through from the recent budget motivations that happened in the parliament last week. So last week, one MP, an opposition MP, stood up in response to the budget motivation that Minister of Health, Esperance Luvindau did, regarding her ministry's budget. Now, what people need to understand, dear listeners, is the budget motivations are like, let's just dot the I's and cross the T's. Because the budget had already been rolled out.
Yeah.
Helmut, if you really wanted the opposition parties to have an insight into budget,
you should have included them when it was being drafted.
When it was being drafted. Meaning, when the previous cabinet exited, the previous cabinet and their executive directors gave submissions already last year, or I think at the start of this year, to the Ministry of Finance. So this is literally a process of, let's just satisfy it for the sake of satisfying it. Because what many of these new MPs from the opposition parties are now discovering is whatever protest or whatever complaint or whatever debate they now bring up in the National Assembly is after the fact. After the fact, and you know what that means in law, after the fact means after the event happened.
Well, you shouldn't have killed him.
Now
he's dead.
Yeah, but now you try to ask the person, what's your motivation for killing the person? But we all know the judgment is you are guilty as daylight. There's nothing you can do. So asking you why you did it is just to satisfy a process.
Yeah.
So one of the opposition party members there in the National Assembly gets up and asks the question, and it's a lovely particular question and a query to Minister Luvindau about why are you talking about digital innovation adoption in Namibia's public health sector when there are foundational things of lack of enough staff at many government facilities, response times to emergencies or assistance, lack of infrastructure, those particular things.
Yeah.
And when I went and sat because I didn't care about the minister's response, but when I sat and thought after that fact, because this happened Thursday, so on Friday I sat there thinking to that event, and I sat there thinking, why did this lady ask this question? Because what many people forget, Helmut, a government is not there just to spend money. Just because, let's say Dwight gets up and you're Minister of Health. But you already submitted a budget to Minister of Finance for your budgeted plans. Like the two questions that Minister of Finance got last year. Former Minister of Finance.
The ones that were supposed to be directed to the Ministry of Gender.
Exactly. And what did he say right there? We can only
dispense money.
We dispense money based upon what the other ministries are telling us. What the other ministries are telling us will be their priority focus for the next financial year.
Yeah.
So what many people are forgetting,
which project they prioritize,
which they couldn't do in the previous financial year,
that's not
they're going to prioritize it for this financial year. And this is what people keep forgetting. And you and I, we're going to mention this, Helmut, until we probably turn all colors of the rainbow, because we have to repeat this fact. Mm-hmm. We see that the government is practicing strict financial control over the dispensation of funding for programs. But before we continue, we've got an ad break. I'll finish that statement just after the break, where we obviously will be appropriating more time from the BES guys without them feeling, well, we wouldn't care that they are unhappy, but yeah.
You're making us sound diabolical.
Tune in to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who you know does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. As we conclude, just a minute past the hour of six.
Yeah, so just where I left off.
Yeah.
So when you have a look at the particular discussion that in that question that came from, you know, where I said the government practices, you actually see the government practicing strict financial control so as to ensure that what is allocated. And remember, you and I, we did that National Planning Commission report about the capital projects.
Yeah.
That they saw up until 2018 that there was a dire position or dire situation with capital projects, where funding is given, but there's poor delivery or satisfactory delivery on the completion of the projects. So this MP asks the question. I sit there thinking to myself, okay, so why did the minister? Now I'm not supporting the minister in particular her speech or whatever, but you just need to think through what a person says. This is what they call critical thinking. And I sat there thinking through this MP's particular question. Because this MP was literally countering, or trying to counter, the minister's motivation based upon why her ministry submitted the particular budget request that they got, or the budget vote, or the budget allocation that they got.
Mm-hmm.
And she highlighted speeding up of processes internally. And then I sat there thinking, but then, as an MP, this MP should have seen the benefit from what the minister is trying to promote. Mm. A digital transformation, Helmut. And this is something that is seen, for example, like in the NHS in the UK. Helmut, the NHS is a public health facility. Did you know you can schedule an ambulance digitally? You can schedule appointments digitally into a government system in the UK of 60 million people. And I'm speaking just about England, not Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland included.
UK.
Not the entire UK, just that aspect in England. They can schedule up so that they know how long does it take for an ambulance to respond to an emergency. How long does it take for, they call them emergency and medical trainers, the EMTs, the guys that are in the ambulance. How long does it take them to provide necessary emergency response treatment to someone that suffered a response? You can even schedule a general practitioner, your everyday doctor, through that system. You can schedule specialized treatment for people waiting for cancer treatments and other particular specialized treatments through that system. They literally have that an e-governance portal for that between the public and the service provider, which is the NHS. And we've got someone standing up asking a question. Why are you focusing on this where you need to go and build more hospitals and hire more staff? But I can see the savings in saying we're doing this because we have to roll out something to speed up service provision.
Digitization. You know, if you look at, you know, the competition taking place, especially in Namibia, in the transport sector, as, the private sector of the transport sphere is fierce. If you look at the, how this, app-based transport services are popping up. Why? When you look at the application-based, forms of, transport services just in Windhoek alone, you see that, it addresses several questions. One is that, that of safety. For one, every time that you are, you are dialing your cab through an app, you are getting a lot of their information, which guarantees to some degree, compared to the traditional way of catching a cab, your safety. Even if you forget something in that cab, you have all their information on your phone. Mm. You can easily just call them back for them to bring you, for them to bring you your luggage or everything or anything that you forgot in their car. But if you go to the traditional way of catching a cab, for example, the ones that, the analog ones, one thing that we all know is that if you forget a bag in there and it has some valuables like your laptop, for example, it's gone. So, the technology, the incorporation of technology have brought about to some degree safety assurances. And, then you look into the seven-seater and, minibuses, headbutting that's going on in that department. One thing that you see is, you actually busted my bubble the other day when you said that, just look at the guys that are operating bus services through the, via websites.
Mm.
They have a lot of programs going on. They have everything is programmed. They have a lot of programming going on. How many people are going to show up? What's the takeoff?
No, it's not through a website, Mahmoud. It's through a system, a booking system.
Yeah, they have an app.
An app.
Yeah.
It's a system. Remember, this system tells you how many seats are sold out on this bus.
Yeah.
You cannot sell more tickets than what is on this
bus.
So
you can't tell people, at the end of, when they show up with their luggage, we are full, you're going to have to go back.
No, you can't tell them that because every seat on that bus has one ticket. You can't double sell.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a horror story that happened.
Oh, dear.
Yes. And this is the horror stories that come out in the private sector, which people don't know about, which doesn't make it, even make it to print media even. 10 years back, and I won't mention the company's name because it's still in operation.
And also they didn't pay us to mention them.
Yeah. 10 years back, the South Africans in charge of this company, because it was a brand thing, and the South Africans were directly involved with the thing here in Windhoek. The South Africans had to come, did a complete audit of all systems and everything, and the roles of everyone, because the South Africans were, now when the South Africans fly into Namibia, Helmut, it's either to fire someone.
Or to congratulate someone.
No, not even congratulation. It's either to fire someone, it's either to do an investigation and then fire someone, or it's either to close down the entire thing.
So now later someone is getting fired.
Yeah, there's a negative result always for whoever is still there. So the South Africans came in, they came through, did their audits, did everything from their systems and stuff. And then the one colleague I had went and met with the South Africans who were accidentally there. She accidentally bumped into them because she went to renegotiate something new. And the South Africans told her that and this is obviously the propensity of how, you can't call it corruption, but you can literally call it mismanagement or malfeasance. Maladministration is the term.
It's still corruption.
No, it's not. It's corruption in public sector. It's maladministration and malfeasance in the private sector.
That's a lot of jargon, Dwight. It's just corruption.
No, it's not corruption. You can't, that's what people have to understand. But, you know, these guys are trying to clear their throats. Just hold your throats there first, you know, before you clear it further. So the discussion happened there that the South African told this colleague of mine, this former colleague of mine, who I also can't mention names of, that literally what happened here, how the theft of monies from the sales of tickets occurred, was that the staff locally was double selling the same ticket number. So let's say you've got 20 tickets to this facility. You can only sell 20 tickets at this price. But they were literally overriding the system to resell the same ticket over and over and over. So that when you show up there as a consumer, you realize that there's too many people for this one service. And there's limited capacity. That's what I mean. You can't call it an app. Yes, now it has moved to an app.
Yeah.
But it's literally
a system.
A system. You are getting a system.
Organization.
But anyway, on that note, dear listeners, we are ending right there because the BS guys are clearing their throats, staring me down, like one of them, staring me down, hoping that I get up.
Until tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM. You all stay tuned for the next program. That's that's a business and economic segment.
Oyo mnangeshefa no hara kushigifa oma kuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mukuru olongaha. Ninge kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora hitatu imwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konora hitatu natu, mbali o hitatu batatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa
Eagle FM the eye.